Welcome to Thrive Deeper, the show based on the Thrive Bible reading guides. This is an ongoing conversation about God's Word with Thrive author, Dr. Matthew Jacoby.
Into the last part of our journey through the Book of Kings and Chronicles.
I tell you, Stu, I was sad last night when I read that just that last section, and because I finished reading this story with Jeremiah, of course, the prophet Jeremiah, who goes right into when they went to eat, when the survivors, and we're going to tell the story in a moment. When the survivors of the defeat, Babylonian defeat, went into Egypt. It's a tragedy, isn't it?
It is.
It's a real tragedy.
Yep.
And I was so sad, you know, to see the prophet Jeremiah, you know, languishing in Egypt. And that's where they started. You know, they're back where they started. Well, they are, but they're not. Let's jump in. Where are we at?
We're at episode 150 of Thrive Deeper. 150, there we go. Today we're going to be finishing off our journey through Kings Chronicles, looking at 2 Kings chapter 23, starting from verse 31 and working through to the end of 2 Kings. And obviously we'll be jumping around looking at Jeremiah and some other places. Judah's reached the end of the road, really, when we're going to discover that as we look through this today. There are sort of four final kings that have all turned away from the exclusive worship of God that Josiah, you know, subsequent to Josiah, that he'd kind of tried to bring restoration to that and redemption to that. And then in a series of attacks, obviously Jerusalem's captured, and we'll talk about that, totally destroyed and the people taken into captivity. So, let's kick in, Matt. Where do we want to begin?
So Josiah does this. I think we should start with Josiah just to get the complete story. And right at the end of Josiah's life, because things are really heating up. In the ancient Near East, you've got this clash between the three great powers. I mean, interestingly, Judah is this little nation state that's sandwiched between these big
Egypt
boys.
And Assyria.
Babylon, Egypt, and Assyria, and then of course there's the Medes and the Persians, sort of up in the sort of further east, and so. You know, Judah is sort of stuck between this conflict. So what happens is Pharaoh Necho is heading north to support support Assyria in what is going to climax in the Battle of Carchemish, famous Battle of Carchemish, and it's Assyria and Egypt joining forces against Babylon. And that's going to happen. And now already Assyria is very reduced at this stage and is really on its last legs. But as Pharaoh is traveling north, for some reason, and we're not exactly sure why, Josiah comes out against him because Pharaoh says, "Hey, I've got no quarrel with you. Can I pass through this region?" Josiah says, "No." I mean, he's going to pick a fight with a serious force here. Now, maybe this is because, of course, as we might remember, that Hezekiah had some alliance with Babylon. In that, because already back in Hezekiah's time, it's been a number of decades now that this tension between Babylon, a nation state within what was the Assyrian Empire, is wanting to pull away. Eventually, of course, Babylon is going to take the whole thing, including Egypt. That's where we're going. Sorry to give away the end of the story, Stu, but that's history. So it may be that he was siding with Babylon. Maybe he's, betting on the, betting on Babylon here. Anyway.
It didn't work out that way on this
didn't work out because in this battle, he dies in the battle and they
the
lose.
Babylonians get pushed
back. Pharaoh Necho defeats him in this battle. He dies. He keeps going north. And it's quite a journey. And immediately his son, Josiah's son, Jehoahaz, gets put on the throne. After 3 months and probably Pharaoh's now up north in Riblah, up north sort of in the area region of Syria, quite north. He summons Jehoahaz and basically takes him captive. So, because he's annexed that area. So he summons the new king, Jehoahaz. For some reason, we're not sure why, after just 3 months, Jehoahaz goes to Pharaoh and then is sent back and taken prisoner in Egypt. He's gone.
And it may be that they refused to pay tribute. I mean,
yeah. We don't know what's going on there. So then Jehoiakim, so he places Jehoiakim on the throne. His original name is Eliakim, and he changes his name to Jehoiakim. This is a power play. I mean, I'm changing your name. It's
my right now to name the kings.
So the naming in the ancient world, the naming right. When you name something, it's an expression of your authority. We see this, for example, in Genesis. One of the expressions of God's authority is God named this and he named that and he called the this that. Mm. And you think, what is, like, does it really matter?
And more importantly,
why is it so emphatic about God naming things?
He got man to name the animals.
And then he got man to name the animals. And then it makes a big deal about that.
Yeah.
And then it says, and whatever Adam named, that was its name. It's like, why are you so emphatic? Well, it's because of this context. It's because in the ancient world, you know, the renaming of someone is an expression of power. So he renames him Jehoiakim. Jehoiakim is Josiah. He's a really hard-hearted guy, really.
It's interesting, none of Josiah's sons really stood up.
It's interesting. There are plenty of people, of course, in his kingdom who didn't. Of course, we know Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and a bit. They all grew up probably within the royal court. And for some reason, Josiah's own sons really didn't follow suit with this. Jehoiakim is going to become king. Now, what happens is that in 605, the Egyptians are going to lose the battle and the Assyrians are going to lose the battle of Carchemish. And Babylon is going to come down south to take all of this territory because it's like a land bridge down to Egypt.
Yes.
Okay. So the Egyptians withdraw. They do a lot of damage on the way as they're going south. Now, the Egyptians are still going to be a force to reckon with, and now the kings are sandwiched between essentially Babylon. So Assyria's destroyed. They've got Babylon in the north, Egypt in the south. Who are we going to back? That's a constant issue now. It says here in 2 Kings 24, during Jehoiakim's reign, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, invaded the land. Now, that's because he's won the Battle of Carchemish.
Yes.
So he's taking what was then annexed by Egypt. He's taking that off the Egyptians. He's driving the Egyptians south. They're going to fester down there and they're going to want to come and engage. And again, Judah's going to be right in the middle.
Yeah.
Now, he goes for 3 years. He is a vassal to Nebuchadnezzar. But there's a bit of... See, Nebuchadnezzar has to withdraw because there's some trouble. He has to go back.
Well, the Egyptians are still kind of pushing back.
And one of the reasons he's going to go back is because his father dies and he's going to take the kingdom, actually. And So he's going to take the opportunity now to rebel and that's a bad move. And probably, again, Jehoiakim's thinking... Nebuchadnezzar's weakened. Egypt's closer.
Yeah, here's my chance.
Yeah, so here's my chance. I'll rebel. Well, really bad idea. So,
and he died just before the Babylonian onslaught. Yeah. Actually, when they came back.
Yeah, that's right. Look, Nebuchadnezzar's occupied elsewhere, but he's going to come back, right? And interestingly, when he eventually comes back, while he's on his way. Good old Jehoiakim dies, right? Yes. Leaving his son.
Jehoiachin.
Yeah, while Nebuchadnezzar's on his way, right?
Yep.
And so Jehoiachin is only gonna rule for 3 months. By the way, Jehoiakim, is this confusing, Stu?
Jehoiakim is
the other son of Josiah takes over from Jehoahaz. So you're going Josiah.
Yes.
Jehoahaz rules for 3 months, gets replaced by Jehoiakim. Pharaoh of Egypt. Pharaoh loses the battle, withdraws south. Babylon takes the territory. Jehoiakim now becomes a vassal to Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar.
Yep.
Until, of course, Nebuchadnezzar looks occupied elsewhere. Then Jehoiakim, thinks, okay, I think Pharaoh looks stronger. I'll rebel against the king of Babylon.
Then dies.
Then he dies. And Jehoiachin, his son, takes over. Remember the story, Stu, in the book of Jeremiah about the king that they took Jeremiah's prophecy to? They wrote all of Jeremiah's prophecies about this threat from the north.
Yeah.
The fact that it was going to be Babylon, right? Pretty timely, because he's betting on Egypt, and all of Jeremiah's prophecies are saying, no, it's Babylon, yeah, right? And you need to submit to the Babylon because God has given you over to the Babylonians.
Yes.
Do not resist them, right? Yes. That's what God is saying through Jeremiah. Yeah.
Yep.
So they bring the scroll. Jeremiah gets Baruch, his scribe, to write it all down. Mm. He reads it to some of the officials. They get really alarmed, like, whoa, we're in a really bad way here. God's given us over. Mm. It's interesting, even up to this point, when you read Jeremiah's prophecies, even up to this point, God was saying to them, even now, if you repent, I can hold back this disaster, which is interesting because you get the impression during, after Manasseh, that it's inevitable.
It's a done deal. Yeah.
Now, there's two perspectives on that. In one sense, it's inevitable because God knows they're not going to mend their ways. God knows that Jehoahaz, Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin, and Zedekiah, the next lot of, these lot of kings, he knows that they're all going to be hard-hearted, right?
Yep.
And yet, and this is the mystery of the sovereignty of God. So, yes, it's inevitable in some sense, and yet, genuinely, God is saying, if you even now turn back to me, I will ward off this disaster. That's what Jeremiah is saying to these guys. Anyway, so he takes the scroll. So they've got this opportunity, right? The officials then say, hey, we need to now take this to the king. This is really alarming. Mm. They take it to the king. As it's being read, Jehoiakim grabs the bit that's just been read, tears it up, throws it into the fire. Reads the next bit, tears it up, throws it into the fire. So Jehoiachin comes to the throne when his father dies.
He's 18 years old.
He barely has a chance to put on his clothes and have a shower.
That's right.
He's, you know, and the Babylonians come back, and he has to face the wrath.
Consequences of his father's. Yeah. Yeah,
and look, he's not gonna hold it. I mean, he just surrenders.
Yep. 3 months basically.
And he's taken
prisoner.
He's taken prisoner,
and they take all the treasures from the temple. Everything's taken back to Babylon at that point.
Everything's taken back to Babylon. Yep. So that's in 597 BC.
Okay, I'll take your word for that.
Yeah, that's in 597 BC. Mm. Because this is not the end of the story.
No, that's
you think
right.
This should be the end of this. This should be, okay, yep, right, we've lost.
The last.
Yeah,
yep.
Jehoiachin gets taken gets taken prisoner. That should have been it, but unfortunately, it's not. So what happens is Nebuchadnezzar puts Zedekiah on the throne in the place of Jehoiachin, who's taken back to Babylon. And Jehoiachin goes back to Babylon with a whole lot of, about 10,000 of the leading peoples, including Ezekiel.
Right.
This is when Ezekiel goes back. So the early chapters of Ezekiel are messages back to the people under Zedekiah, are messages back to them saying, hey, this is why this is happening. Again, don't hold out. Jeremiah is right through this time saying, guys, don't try to hold out. This is inevitable. Ezekiel's saying the same thing. This is happening because of your sins. You're going to have to serve the king of Babylon. Zedekiah, so you've got...
Daniel was probably another one. Those guys were probably taken in that first group of 10,000.
That's right, Daniel's there in Babylon. You've already got heaps of people in Babylon, right? And so Zedekiah becomes king. Of course, his name is Mattathiah, but Nebuchadnezzar changes his name to Zedekiah.
Yes.
Zedekiah's got a difficult job here because there are all of these, this really strong patriotism, and it's being really pumped up by these false prophets who are still there, right?
Yes. Yep.
They're pumping up this patriotism. Jeremiah's counteracting that, saying, No.
This is not
you
God's
need
plan.
To serve. Yeah. Do not rebel against the king of Assyria because it's not going to go well.
King of Babylon.
The king of Babylon. Sorry, Assyria.
That's right.
King of Babylon. You know, they're thinking, oh, maybe the Egyptians, you know, it's. Jeremiah said, forget about Egypt and they're not going to help you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Egypt's going to be, Jeremiah tells them, Egypt is going to be completely destroyed.
Yeah.
Believe me, it's amazing Jeremiah's prophecies because again and again and again, it's exactly what happens.
And Jeremiah actually says that to one of the other prophets who tries to say otherwise. He says, well, we'll know, won't we, when everything comes to pass,
that's right.
Who the real prophet really is.
Because it actually seemed unlikely. It actually did seem unlikely that that Egypt would fall to Babylon. I mean, who are the Babylonians? They live miles away. They've got this massive supply issue. You know, they've got Egypt's just down in the south. It's a powerful kingdom. Mm. Man, it looks unlikely. And Jeremiah said, no, mark my words, Babylon is going to destroy Egypt. And you know, anyway, that's what happens. But look, Zedekiah is in this difficult position. He's got to deal with all of this,
all of the factions.
Mm-hmm. They don't even, you know, many people still think Jehoiachin has been taken to Babylon. They still regard him as the real king.
Yes.
They're thinking, oh, no, he's going to come back. You know, he's going to come back. Mm-hmm. No, he's not going to come back, you know. So Zedekiah...
And Zedekiah is not a Davidic, not in the Davidic line. So in a sense, Jehoiachin is the last Davidic king.
Yep.
Zedekiah is really just someone that, as you said, Neb's just put on the throne and renamed him basically and called him Zedekiah.
Yep.
But he gets tired of it, tries to break free of the Babylonians as well, which again, against Jeremiah's warnings, and, you know, he tries to escape. But of course...
Yeah. Well, look, he is Jehoiachin's uncle.
Yes.
Now, we're not sure what, you know, what that
means.
What that means. He's royal. Mm. He's royal enough. That'll do.
Yeah.
So Zedekiah rebels against the king of Babylon. You can imagine, Stu, how absolutely sick of these people. The king of Nebuchadnezzar, he'd be absolutely sick of these people.
Yeah.
It's like, what have I got to do? Everyone else is lying down.
Towing the line.
Towing the line. Like, you know.
And you're this little tiny state. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, seriously, what do you got to do? You know, so he sends back the forces. They lay siege to the city.
Yeah.
It's a year and a half siege. Jeremiah all along is saying, guys, don't hold out.
Yeah.
Like you, seriously, you're just going to inflict enormous pain on yourselves. They go through this incredible famine. This, you know, siege warfare is where they basically circle the city. Mm. No one's allowed out, although they are inviting people to come out and surrender because they want to lower morale. Come out. You know, we'll, you know, come
but also it's got to be costing them a lot to maintain the siege. So,
you
know, in a sense, it's even everyone's best interest.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
I guess.
I mean, that's why cities like Jerusalem held out. They're very difficult. Jerusalem's a very difficult city to break into. You know, you've got to build these massive siege ramps. It's got these big, deep valleys all around it and you know, and these massive walls. And so difficult city to break into. But, you know, he's building these siege ramps and eventually he starves the city out. They break through. Yep. Zedekiah.
Tries to escape.
Yeah. You know, there's some indication that Zedekiah sort of wanted to surrender, but he's afraid to do so. Mm. You know, they break through, Zedekiah does a runner.
Yep.
He's no hero, this guy. Mm. With some of his soldiers, flees in the night towards the Jordan to the plains of Jericho. Mm. Interesting place, Stu, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Divine irony there.
Irony, you know? Plains of Jericho, because of course that's where they entered. That's where they came into the land initially.
Under Joshua.
That's right. Came from the land of Ammon into, it's across the plains of Jericho. Yeah. Now they're going, you know, now he's escaping out the same way. Yeah. Nebuchadnezzar's army, they catch up with him. I mean, he's shown no mercy. His sons are killed in front of him. His eyes are plucked out.
Yep.
And he's taken in chains to Babylon where eventually he dies. Mm.
The city's completely destroyed.
Yeah,
the
city's completely destroyed. Temple's completely destroyed. I mean, it's just flattened. It's all in ruins. This is when Jeremiah, you know, writes the Book of Lamentations.
Yes.
I mean, it's such a moving book, the Book of Lamentations.
The king's kind of citation of all what's going on, it seems very kind of just factual and academic. There's no real emotion in it.
No,
but
that's
you go
right.
read Lamentations
and
you get to get us insight
really
into how people are feeling.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what those,
time.
You know, the last sections of the Book of Jeremiah and Lamentations. I mean, you really feel this stuff, you know, and you really sense the heart of God through this. because it's like, I'm giving you up for this. I'm giving you up to this. But as it's happening, he's saying, listen, don't give up hope.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to bring you back.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring you back. Right. On the other side of this,
yeah,
there's hope.
Yeah.
It's really amazing, actually, in the book of Jeremiah, how you get this change. So through Jehoiakim's time, it's very much, no, no, you're going to be destroyed. You're going to be destroyed. But once Jehoiachin is taken into exile, you know, and then while the siege, even while the siege is happening, it's, you know, Jeremiah is saying, because he's in the city.
Yes.
And they're all starving and lost hope. But he's saying, no, just give up. Give up the fight because I've given you over to the Babylonians. But there's also this message of hope, you know. I'm not going to give up. You know, that's when, you know, I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, plans to prosper you and not harm you. That is said,
Jeremiah,
in the last days of the siege when they're all starving to death.
Exactly right.
And they're about to lose a battle. Right, because think about that. We think, look, I know the plans. I have everything. You know, I'm going to not to harm you, but to prosper you. You know, to us, that verse means nothing bad's going to happen. Actually,
they are
about to experience the most traumatic thing, really, the nation has experienced thus far. They're going to be taken into exile, but ultimately, God's plans for them are going to, you know, well, it's going to be amazing as the future goes on. Mm. So, So Jeremiah is there among, you know, among the
probably
ruins.
Just the poorest of people,
and the poorest of people left
behind. Who are going to look after the land, who don't have any kind of sense of leadership, or really, in a sense.
Yeah,
Jeremiah gets left as well, probably because there's some level of respect.
Yeah.
For Jeremiah as a leader, but not a rebellious leader at this point in time, anyway. And then of course they carry on, and Babylon then appoint someone else to
Gedaliah. They appoint a governor, basically.
Yes.
I mean, this guy's got kind of, pardon, nobility connections, but he's just a governor. They appoint him. He's saying, listen, let's just keep a low profile here. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty good. You know, they have a good harvest.
Yep.
Serve the king of Babylon and we'll be fine. Yep. So you think, and Jeremiah's saying the same.
Yep. Which is what God said.
Which is what God has said to them, right?
Yeah.
And this is kind of looking good for...
Even though it's not what we hoped it would be or we thought it was going to be, this is what we've been told to do for now. Yeah. And so this is what we should do, but no.
That's right.
There's a group that decide.
But then there's this guy, Ishmael.
Yeah.
Interesting that that's his name, isn't it?
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it?
There's this guy, Ishmael, who's gone to the king of Ammon and stirred on by the king of Ammon. Mm. You know, Ishmael, who's, you know, got some royal connections, you know, is sort of spurred on to go and assassinate
Gedaliah
and, you know, start, you know, I don't know what the
rise
plan.
Up.
Yeah, rise up. I mean, I don't know what that's about as far as that plan goes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of Gedaliah's other officials says, listen, you need to watch this guy, Ishmael. Like, he means trouble. Gedaliah thinks, no, as if you do. Like, what a pointless plan that is. Like, as if he would do that.
Yeah.
You know. So he actually invites Ishmael for dinner. Mm. During the dinner, he gets up, kills Gedaliah.
That's right.
Kills some of the other officials. Kills Babylonian soldiers.
That's right. Yeah.
Right? And then he runs back to Ammon. You know, escapes back to Ammon.
Mm.
And so you've got, you know, you've got these remaining people.
Who are now terrified that the Babylonians are going to come for revenge.
Yeah, that's right.
And so they decide, man, we need to get out of here before they get here.
Yeah, that's right. So the guy who, I think his name is Johan.
Yes.
Who originally advised about, you know, you've got to watch out for this guy. Now he's sort of in charge by default.
Yeah.
And he says, right, we're out of here. you know,
let's make a run for it while we can.
We're going to make a run for it because they're going to come back and mate, they're going to completely destroy it. Jeremiah says, no, don't do that.
Mm.
He predicts, he's going to come back, but he'll actually, you know, you'll find favor with the king of Babylon. You'll be able to explain to him this is what happened.
Yeah.
Probably because, you know, there are witnesses and we can, you know, he will have none of it there.
Yeah.
They're terrified, right? Yeah. So they said, right, that's it. We're going to Egypt. And they take Jeremiah with them.
Yeah.
Jeremiah, Jeremiah says, you really think you're going to escape the king of Babylon and Egypt?
Yeah.
He said, the king of Babylon is going to go and annex Egypt as well.
Yeah.
You're not going to escape from the king of Babylon there. Anyway, what do they do? They go down to Egypt. The last, you know, the last part of Jeremiah is written in Egypt. Jeremiah's in Egypt.
Yeah.
You know.
And isn't it interesting, again, the irony? It's kind of the reversal of the Exodus.
Oh,
you know, we've just gone back
sad.
To where we came from.
It's yeah. I read that last part of, you know, Jeremiah. I'm just so sad. There he is. And poor Jeremiah, you know, there in Egypt. Right, we're back here again. Great.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
but the Book of Kings finishes with a really important note of hope. I mean, it says in the 37th year, this is right at the end of the Book of Kings.
Yeah.
In the 37th year of the exile of Jehoiachin, king of Judah, the king of Babylon.
Well, Nebuchadnezzar dies.
Yeah, Nebuchadnezzar dies. This old Marduk became king of Babylon.
Yep,
he released Jehoiachin, king of Judah, from prison.
Mm.
He did this on the 27th day of, anyway, gives the date. Showing, by the way, that this is all history. This is all history.
Yeah.
He spoke kindly to him, gave him a seat of high honor, higher than those of the other kings who were with him in Babylon.
Mm.
So Jehoiachin put aside his prison clothes, and for the rest of his life, he ate regularly at the king's table. Day by day, the king gave Jehoiachin a regular allowance as long as he lived.
Mm.
Now,
and Jehoiachin is the last king of the Davidic line at this
last
point.
King of the Davidic, you know. Now, the importance of this is that, you know, the king, in a sense, symbolizes the people, right? God, right, they've suffered. You know, they've suffered here.
Mm.
This is now God is about restoration. Now this is he finds favor in this place, right?
Yeah.
You know, Jehoiachin was 18 years old. I mean, as I said previously, he wasn't a good guy back then, but hey, look, he's learned his lesson.
Yeah.
He's there with Ezekiel.
Yes.
And Daniel.
I think
the guy's probably going okay. I mean, you know, reading between the lines, God shows him favor. And I think that it's this indication, because what you get the sense that the people get turned around. You know what I mean?
You've got, they're beginning to understand why this happened.
That's right. They're beginning to understand why this happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what is going to happen is going to be there's going to be really something of a revival, spiritual revival among the, you know,
exiles.
Among the exiles. Now you're talking like, I don't know, 20,000 odd people, you know, they're in exile.
Yeah.
Probably 15,000, perhaps closer to that. They're going to, you know, there's going to be a real time of renewal for them. They've got Ezekiel, they've got Daniel. I mean, some of the greatest visions of you know, in the Bible come actually in Babylon.
In this time.
You know, in this time.
Yeah.
So this, you know, the book finishes on this note of hope.
Mm.
This is hope, you know. Now, of course, the Book of Chronicles finishes this way. It says, he carried into exile to Babylon the remnant, there's Nebuchadnezzar, who escaped from the sword, and they became servants to him and his successors until the kingdom of Persia came to power. Because remember, this is written later again.
Yes.
The land enjoyed its Sabbath rests until the time of its desolation, it rested until the 70 years were completed in fulfillment of the word of the Lord spoken by Jeremiah.
Jeremiah,
man.
Yeah.
You know,
Jeremiah 29, if you want to look that
Jeremiah 29, it's going to be 70 years. Now, from the time when Nebuchadnezzar first annexed and took the first few captives, 605, it's 70 years. Like, it is a remarkable prophecy.
Absolutely.
So it goes on to say, in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, in order to fulfill the word of the Lord spoken by Jeremiah, again, the Lord moved the heart of Cyrus, king of Persia, to make a proclamation throughout his realm and also to put it into writing. This is what Cyrus, king of Persia, says. The Lord, the God of heaven, has given me all the kingdoms of the earth and has appointed me to build a temple for him at Jerusalem and in Judah. Any of his people among you may go up, and may the Lord, their God, be with them. That's where it ends.
Mm.
You know, so in both cases.
And this is really the beginning of the Nehemiah story, isn't it? When they go back and start
the
city.
So this is written after they've come back from exile.
Of course,
and this is where they're back there now, right?
Mm.
And what they're realizing, and the importance of that little bit in the end of Chronicles, is like, you know, God did all this.
Yeah.
God has engineered all of this. God is God, not over, just over us. What you've learned lately, particularly from the prophet Daniel, who, remember, predicts the coming and going of the nations.
Yes.
What they've learned during the exile is that this God of yours isn't just a tribal God. He is the God of all of the earth. Their view of God now has expanded immensely. Now, it's going to be really important for the character of this people. Their vision is going to be enlarged, right? Mm. And now that they are understanding, this is the God of the whole earth. Who, like, when you look at the coming and going of the nations, you know, this is what they heard from Daniel. And even here, yeah, it finishes with this: God rigged all of this.
Yeah.
And may the Lord your God bless you through the mouth of Cyrus. May the Lord your God be with you. Mm. And it's Cyrus is saying this, you know. Mm. What an ending. Powerful. To a story. Yeah. Because there is always hope. There is always hope.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Thrive Deeper. Our home on the internet is thrivetoday.tv. You can contact us, ask questions, see all our resources and much more at our website, thrivetoday.tv. We really appreciate the questions and thoughts about what you're reading as we go through the Bible with Thrive. Until next time, our prayer is that these shows will inspire you to go deeper and thrive.